Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 9, Chapter 9, and actually it's Chapter 8 and then into Chapter 9. So I'm just going to run through the translations until we come to text 5 on the board. So from text 25. O my Lord, those whose hearts are bewildered by the influence of lust, greed, envy, and illusion are interested only in false hearth and home in this world created by your Maya. Attached to home, wife, and children, they wander in this material world perpetually. O super soul of all living entities, O personality of Godhead, simply by seeing you, I have now been freed from all lusty desires, which are the root cause of insurmountable illusion and bondage in the material world. O King Parikshit, when Anshuman had glorified the Lord in this way, the great sage Kapila, the powerful incarnation of Vishnu, being very merciful to him, explained to him the path of knowledge. The personality of Godhead said, my dear Anshuman, here is the animal sought by your grandfather for sacrifice. Please take it. As for your forefathers who have been burnt to ashes, they can be delivered only by Ganges water and not by any other means. Thereafter, Anshuman circumambulated Kapila Muni and offered him respectful obeisances, bowing his head. After fully satisfying him in this way, Anshuman brought back the horse meant for sacrifice, and with this horse, Maharaj Sagara performed the remaining ritualistic ceremonies. After delivering charge of his kingdom to Anshuman and thus being freed from all material anxiety and bondage, Sagara Maharaj, following the means instructed by Ova Muni, achieved the supreme destination. So chapter 9, the dynasty of Anshuman. So shall I read the foreword here? This chapter describes the history of the dynasty of Anshuman up to Katvanga, and it also describes how Bhagirath brought the water of the Ganges to this earth. The son of Maharaj Anshuman was Dalip, who tried to bring the Ganges to this world, but who died without success. Bhagirath, the son of Dalip, was determined to bring the Ganges to the material world, and for this purpose he underwent severe austerities. But the Ganges, being fully satisfied by his austerities, made herself visible to him, wanting to give him a benediction. Bhagirath then asked her to deliver his forefathers. Although Mother Ganges agreed to come down to earth, she made two conditions. First, she wanted some suitable male to be able to control her waves. Second, although all sinful men would be freed from sinful reactions by bathing in the Ganges, Mother Ganges did not want to keep all these sinful reactions. These two conditions were subject matters for consideration. Bhagirath replied to Mother Ganges, the personality of Godhead, Lord Shiva, will be completely able to control the waves of your water, and when pure devotees bathe in your water, the sinful reactions left by sinful men will be counteracted. Bhagirath then performed austerities to satisfy Lord Shiva, who is called Ashutosh, because he is naturally satisfied very easily. Lord Shiva agreed to Bhagirath's proposal to check the force of the Ganges. In this way, simply by the touch of the Ganges, Bhagiratha's fathers were delivered and allowed to go to the heavenly planets. The son of Bhagiratha was Shruta, the son of Shruta was Naba, and Naba's son was Sinduvip. The son of Sinduvip was Ayatayu, and the son of Ayatayu was Rituparna, who was a friend of Nala. Rituparna gave Nala the art of gambling and learned from him the art of Ashvavidya. The son of Rituparna was known as Savakama. The son of Savakama was Sudas, and his son was Sodas. The wife of Sodas was named Damayanti or Madayanti, and Sodas was also known as Kalma Sapad. Because of some defect in his fruitive activities, Sodas was cursed by Vashishta to become a Rakshasa. While walking through the forest, he saw a Brahmin engaged in sex with his wife, and because he had become a Rakshasa, he wanted to devour the Brahmin. Although the Brahmin's wife pleaded with him in many ways, Sodasa devoured the Brahmin, and the wife therefore cursed him, saying, as soon as you engage in sex, you will die. After 12 years, therefore, even though Sodasa was released from the curse of Vashishta Muni, he remained sinless. At that time, with Sodasa's permission, Vashishta impregnated Sodasa's wife, Madayanti. Because Madayanti bore the child for many years, but still could not give birth, Vashishta struck her abdomen with a stone, and thus a son was born. The son was named Ashmaka. The son of Ashmaka was known as Balika. He was protected from the curse of Parashuram because of being surrounded by many women, and therefore he's also known as Narikavacha. When the entire world was devoid of Kshatriyas, he became the original father of more Kshatriyas. He is therefore sometimes called Mulaka. From Balika, Dasarath was born. From Dasarath came Aidavidi, and from Aidavidi came Vishvasaha. The son of Vishvasaha was Maharaj Katvanga. Maharaj Katvanga joined the demigods in fighting the demons and was victorious, and the demigods therefore wanted to give him a benediction. But when the king inquired how long he would live and understood that his life would last only a few seconds more, he immediately left the heavenly planets and returned to his own abode by airplane. He could understand that everything in this material world is insignificant, and thus he fully engaged in worshipping the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari. So next translation. Shukadeva Goswami continued, King Angshuman, like his grandfather, performed austerities for a very long time. Nonetheless, he could not bring the Ganges to this material world, and thereafter, in due course of time, he died. Like Angshuman himself, Dilip, his son, was unable to bring the Ganges to this material world, and he also became a victim of death in due course of time. Then Dilip's son, Bhagirath, performed very severe austerities to bring the Ganges to this material world. Thereafter, Mother Ganges appeared before King Bhagiratha and said, I am very much satisfied with your austerities and am now prepared to give you benedictions as you desire. Being thus addressed by Ganga Devi, Mother Ganges, the king bowed his head before her and explained his desire. The king's desire was to deliver his forefathers who had been burnt to ashes because of disrespecting Kapila Muni. Next translation. Mother Ganges replied, when I fall from the sky to the surface of the planet Earth, the water will certainly be very forceful. Who will sustain that force? If I am not sustained, I shall pierce the surface of the Earth and go down to Rasatala, the Patala area of the universe. Text 5. Translation. O King, I do not wish to go down to the planet Earth, for there the people in general will bathe in my water to cleanse themselves of the reactions of their sinful deeds. When all these sinful reactions accumulate in me, how shall I become free from them? You must consider this very carefully. Purport by Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. The Supreme Personality of Godhead says, Sarva Dhammam Paritraja Mam Ekam Sharanam Raja Aham Tvam Sarva Pepyayo Moksha Yashashmi Masukaha. Abandon all righteous religion and just surrender unto me. I shall deliver you from all sinful reactions. Do not fear. That's Bhagavad Gita 1866. The Supreme Personality of Godhead can accept the reactions of anyone's sinful deeds and neutralize them because he is pavitra, pure like the sun, which is never contaminated by any worldly affection. Teji yasam na doshaya vane sava bujo yata. Bhagavatam 10:33-29. One who is very powerful is not affected by any sinful activity. But here we see that Mother Ganges fears being burdened with the sins of the people in general who would bathe in her waters. This indicates that no one but the Supreme Personality of Godhead is able to neutralize the reactions of sinful deeds, whether one's own or those of others. Sometimes the spiritual master, after accepting a disciple, must take charge of that disciple's past sinful activities, and being overloaded must sometimes suffer, if not fully, then partially, for the sinful acts of the disciple. Every disciple, therefore, must be very careful not to commit sinful activities after initiation. The poor spiritual master is kind and merciful enough to accept a disciple and partially suffer for that disciple's sinful activities, but Krishna, being merciful to his servant, neutralizes the reactions of sinful deeds for the servant who engages in preaching his glories. Even Mother Ganges feared the sinful reactions of the people in general and was anxious about how she would counteract the burden of these sins. Om Agyana Timarandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshuran Militamjena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhaktarinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So the verse that's being referred to there, 10th canto, chapter 33, text 29, the translation is, the status of powerful controllers is not harmed by any apparently audacious transgression of morality we may see in them, for they are just like fire, which devours everything fed into it and remains unpolluted. And I just looked up the word audacious, because I was wondering, you know, we kind of know what the word means, roughly. So audacious is if you're very bold, or you do something a bit risky, or if you're disrespectful. That's audacious. So so that's... So, and then Prabhupada says in the purport, says that if you surrender... to Krishna, Sarva, Dharma, and Paritraja, then Krishna will burn up all the reactions to your sinful activity if you surrender to him. So the Ganges is worried because all these sinful people will be bathing in her, and she's not Krishna. She's not the Supreme Personality of Godhead, so she can't just neutralize them like the sun. Pavitra can neutralize no matter what you put before the sun will shine down and purify. So she's afraid. And so it's being advised that we take heed of this, that we should be afraid as well of sinful reactions, and that we should take shelter of Krishna. We should surrender to Krishna. So when we hear the word surrender, like Hare Krishna, there was one devotee that I used to do Sankirtan with all the time, and he was always saying to me, Prabhu, you just got to go for it. You've just got to go for it, you know. He was doing really, really big, and I used to. After a while, I was really getting annoyed because every time, his advice would always be, just go for it, you know. So I started thinking in my mind, being the demon that I am, that go for what, you know? What does he mean, go for what, you know? Go for it. So, and also we hear this expression, you should just surrender. Prabhu, you know. So before I became a devotee, surrender to me was when the cowboys were being defeated by the Indians. They put the little flag on the stick, and they put it out, waved the white flag, and then the game was over, and they came out. Everything was okay, you know. So what does it mean to surrender to Krishna? What does that mean? What does that bring to mind? You know, what connotation? If we're going for it is like surrendering to Krishna. That we should just. So what should we just do? So I was talking to Bhakta Simon yesterday. We were talking a little bit about Sankirtan and this go for it, this surrender. What Krishna is looking for is the endeavor. We tend to emphasize because we're quite fruitive in the West the result. But the real result is the endeavor. So that's what's Krishna. This go for it, this surrender is that we should be making a very, very strong, determined endeavor to follow Krishna's instructions, the spiritual master's instructions. So Srila Prabhupada says in the purport that the fact that the Mother Ganges is afraid of being burdened with sins of people in general indicates that no one but the Supreme Personality of Godhead is able to neutralize the reactions of sinful deeds, whether one's own or those of others. So, in that regard, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur makes a nice point in that book put together by Bhakti Vikash Maharaj, Sri Bhaktisiddhanta Vaibhava. This is Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur talking about the potency of surrendering to Krishna. Hundreds of famines can be alleviated not only by Nam Abhas, but even by Nam Aparad, offensive taking of the name. The mukti that is not attained in crores of births, by Brahma Gyan, knowledge of Brahman, can be had by one single Namabhas. This is no exaggeration. So Namabhas is just, you know, the intermediary stage. You're trying to the best of your ability. And so that's the significance of our devotional activities that we're performing. And then Prabhupada goes on to say that every disciple must be careful not to commit sin after initiation, because the guru will suffer. So an initiation is an important step. And then once you take that, then Prabhupada compares it to declaring war on Maya. Okay, now the war's begun, you know. Now you've declared you're on this side, and Maya's on that side. So now she starts to take a few pot shots at the aspiring devotee. And so if the devotee does... See, the Ganges is afraid of people bathing in it because of the simple activity that will be offloaded onto her. But the disciple needs to be even more afraid, because if he performs sinful activity, not only does he suffer, but he's making the spiritual master suffer as well. So he has to take that into consideration. That it's not just himself now. Oh, well, I don't care if I get some sinful reaction. But he's going to make his spiritual master suffer. So, and Prabhupada's saying the poor spiritual master, the poor, he's being kind, the spiritual master is being... But the disciple continues committing sinful activities, and then the spiritual master suffers on his behalf. the poor spiritual master suffers, but Krishna neutralizes reactions of sinful deeds. Okay, so I had a question I wanted to ask. If everyone could listen to this, and then if anybody would like to say what they think this means, because this could mean a few things, actually. The poor spiritual master is kind and merciful enough to accept a disciple and partially suffer for that disciple's sinful activities. But Krishna, being merciful to his servant, neutralizes the reactions of sinful deeds for the servant who engages in preaching his glories. So, anyone like to say what they think that means? The spiritual master is kind, and he accepts, he's prepared to suffer for the disciples' sin, but Krishna, being merciful, neutralizes the reactions of sinful deeds for the servant who engages in preaching his glories. That was initially the understanding that I had as well. I was thinking, well, Krishna will neutralize the reactions of sinful deeds for the servant who engages in preaching his glories. So I was thinking, well that must mean... But Srila Prabhupada did suffer. He did accept, and he did suffer. So then I was thinking, so he did suffer, and obviously Srila Prabhupada was, more than anyone else, engaged. So then, another way of looking at it is, but Krishna... Neutralizes, yeah. Not minimize, but neutralize. So that could also mean being merciful to his servant neutralizes the reactions of sinful deeds for the servant who engages in preaching his glories. In other words, you take initiation, and then the onus is upon you as a servant now that you engage in preaching the glories of the Lord, because then you'll neutralize your sinful reactions and the spiritual master won't have to suffer. So when you step forward for initiation, because I was a bit worried. I was giving class and I'm thinking, I'm at the manor and there's lots of services going on, and here comes that fanatic from Scotland. He's going to start talking about book distribution. Oh, here we go. And you see them all filing out, you know. A few are nodding off, you know. And, you know, what about peeling the potatoes? And there is so many other services which are also really important. And then I was thinking, well, it's such a powerful statement Prabhupada's making here. You know, you want to neutralize your sinful reactions, then go and preach. That's what he's saying, you know. And even someone that's not a fanatic would have to see that that's what Prabhupada's saying, you know. And if you care for your spiritual master, you don't want him to suffer the reactions to your sinful activities. So you neutralize them, you go and preach. And so that's... So, because I was thinking, well, the spiritual master does suffer, and certainly after Srila Prabhupada, spiritual masters have suffered. Spiritual masters have taken on... They maybe didn't realize in the early days what they were taking on, being spiritual masters. And then now we see in due course of time that being a spiritual master is not an easy service, and there's many dangers and risks in taking on all that reaction. And so Prabhupada compared it to a fire. He said, if you have a big fire and you throw a big lump of wood in it, then it's okay, the fire will just burn it up. But if you have a little fire and you throw a big piece of wood on it, the fire goes out. And that's the end of the fire, unfortunately. So on the subject of preaching, Prabhupada explained yesterday that what preaching means. Preaching doesn't mean that you have this little box when you go out on Sankirtan and you whip it out and you see somebody jump up on top of it and you stop this person and you say, you're going to hell, brother. You know, I used to be like you as well, brother, but I've been saved by Krishna. I've been shaved by Krishna. And I'm bold again. And you, brother, are going to hell. You know, but that's not really going to get the person inspired to take up devotional service or start chanting. So preaching, Prabhupada explained, preaching is making the unfortunate fortunate, whether that's giving him a raskula or an invitation or taking a donation or getting him to take a set of books. And you're in a dhoti with Hare Krishna in bold letters over the top of your head, whatever way you do it. But if you can get that person to become favorable and fortunate, then that's preaching. Whatever way that is, whatever level you can come in on, if he goes away favorable to Krishna consciousness, then that's preaching. That's real preaching, you know. And if they go away, they have an interaction with you, and they go away thinking, wow, those Hare Krishnas are such heavy, overbearing, you know, I never want anything to do. So that's not preaching, that's putting the person off. So there's a few quotes that I accumulated on, which I'd like to share with the devotees, if they don't mind, on preaching. So this is from Srimad Bhagavatam. The practical effect of our spreading the Krishna consciousness movement all over the world is that now the most degraded debauchees are becoming the most elevated saints. So that's a practical. So we have all these most elevated saints in our presence here, Sadhu Sangha. The fruits, devotee the other day was giving class and he was talking about the fruits. Lord Chaitanya was giving fruits, I think it was Kartik Chandra. If the fruits are distributed all over the world, my reputation as a pious man will be known everywhere, and thus all people will glorify my name with great pleasure. So I thought that was interesting because Lord Chaitanya is saying my name. And I just wanted to share, we had this newspaper clip a few years ago, because in Scotland we had this campaign, the Garanga campaign, and we had Garanga up everywhere. And so anyway, somebody asks, on the M6, I don't know what the newspaper is, one of the local newspapers, on the M6 just south of Manchester, someone has daubed the word Garanga on a bridge. What is the origin and meaning of this word? So the answer from the newspaper reporter: when a follower of Krishna chants Gauranga or Gauranga, he is telling us to be happy. It's a divine name, another title for the Indian mystic Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, 1485 to 1533, who is Gauranga, the golden. Lord Chaitanya was born of Brahmin parents in Nabadweep, Bengal, a center of Sanskrit learning. As a young man, he attained prominence as a scholar, but at 22, he underwent a profound religious conversion and became an ecstatic devotee of Krishna. At 24, he became a renunciant and left Nabadweep on pilgrimage, finally settling in Puri, Orissa, where he lived the rest of his life. His charisma made him the leader of an important sect of Vaishnavites, the followers of Lord Vishnu, that is still active. He emphasized the importance of non-ritualistic worship in the form of kirtan, religious song, dance, and devotion, focusing on the love of Krishna and his consort Radha as the archetype of mystical union. Chaitanya is regarded by followers as an avatar, incarnation of Krishna and Radha in a single form. In these times of gridlocked roads, Gauranga on the M6 is probably a spirited Krishna response to road rage. So I thought that was quite nice, you know, for the Garanga campaign to get that in the paper like that, you know. People, it's obviously filtering through that there's something about this, you know. Although one man did stop me once and told me, no, actually I said to him on Sankirtan, can you say Gauranga? And he went, oh, Gauranga, you know what that Gauranga means? And I said, no. He said, it's a resin that they discovered in 1967, and they use it to build the bridges so that they stay up. So that was his. Anyway, either way, he was still going around thinking of Gauranga. So when we're preaching, the whole idea of preaching is that we're trying to help the person and encourage him to take up devotional service. And in the Path of Perfection, Prabhupada refers to this mentality. He says, as Lord Jesus Christ said, we should hate the sin, not the sinner. That is a very nice statement, because the sinner is under illusion. He is mad. If we hate him, how will we deliver him? So that should be our mood. And then Prabhupada says, temple construction, comparing the importance of book distribution to other services, Prabhupada says in the Majjhima Lila, temple construction is meant for the general populace and neophyte devotees, but the business of empowered and advanced devotees is to write books, publish them, and distribute them widely. So that's write books, publish them, and distribute them widely. So real service from the Anchalila, Chaitanya Charitamrita. One who identifies himself as a follower of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who said, Iha sabara kona mati hoyabi nishtara, how will all these yavanas be delivered? Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was always anxious to deliver the fallen souls because their fallen condition gave him great unhappiness. We should adopt the cause of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to try to relieve the anxiety he feels. This is actually service to the Lord. So again, that's very much encouraging Sankirtan. And then in the Majjhalila, if the confidential devotees do not take up the task of elevating everyone to Krishna consciousness, then who will do it? Those who claim to be devotees but do not engage in Krishna's service to elevate all living creatures to Krishna consciousness are to be considered Kanishta Adhikaris, people in the lowest stage of devotional service. Those who are active in the Krishna consciousness movement should not remain in the neophyte stage, but should rise to the platform of preachers, the second platform of devotional service. Devotional service is so enchanting that even the first-class devotee, Uttama Adhikari, also come down to the second platform to preach and render service to the Lord for the benefit of the whole world. So that's interesting, because you would think, well, the Uttama Adhikari would be better at distributing because he's indiscriminate, everyone's a devotee, but he's coming down to the Majjhima platform. So why is it that it's, if we're supposed to engage everybody, then why is it that because the Majjhima, the symptom of a Majjhima Adhikari is that he's able to discriminate. He can see the non-devotee, he sees the devotee, he sees the envious, and he sees Krishna. He sees those four different things. So why is it important on Sankirtan or preaching or spreading the glories of the Lord that we have this ability to discriminate? Yes, Prabhu? Yeah. Any other reasons why we have to discriminate? One is to avoid the envious. Oh, sorry.
You have to tailor your response to depending on who you're talking to.
Yeah, that's a good answer as well, yeah. Yeah. Save the least wounded. They say the paramedic, he's on the battlefield and there's a little head there saying, oh, help me, you know, and all the body's been blown away, and then there's one with just his finger missing, so the paramedic's thinking, well, he's got more of a chance, you know, so he saves the least wounded first. So that's another one. And what were you going to say, Prabhu?
Well, avoiding the envious, we have to be merciful, not
to be Yeah, so I don't know if devotees have ever experienced when they're on Sankirtan, sometimes it can be a little difficult, and personally speaking, I'm very much Kanishta, so I'm looking at all these people coming towards me, and it's like a Lord of the Rings. It's just a whole load of trolls running towards me, you know, coming down Buchanan Street on a Saturday, and I'm thinking, oh my God, you know, who am I going to stop? Nobody looks like they're interested at all, you know. And it's raining. There's two species of Glaswegian, one's in the rain and one's in the sun. And in the rain there are different kettle of fish. So they're all coming down the road and thinking, oh my God. Anyway, so you try, you make an endeavor. Then by Lord Chaitanya's mercy, you get this little insight, you know, who the devotee is. Wow, that person over there looks good. And you see this is a non-devotee, and then you see, wow, he looks pretty envious. Like, and then you start being given the vision. You become empowered by Lord Chaitanya to start seeing and approaching the person, and then you're empowered to say the right thing. You're given the intelligence. So many things are going on when you're doing Sankirtan. You're being used as an instrument, as a vehicle, to spread Lord Chaitanya's mission. So that's why it's important. And Prabhupada said we should come to the second class platform as soon as possible. So one of the fastest ways to do it is to go out there, because it's almost instantaneous, because as soon as you start doing it, you're raised up onto this platform where you can discriminate, you can start seeing, you know. You get that special empowerment by Lord Chaitanya. So Bhaktisiddhanta said a wonderful thing about the bhiksha. Bhiksha is the devotees would go out and collect door to door. And sometimes when you're on Sankirtan, you can start feeling like, you know, this is mundane, and I've just stopped this old lady and taken £2 off her, and she's probably going to have nothing to eat tonight. And that was really cruel of me. You know the way the mind can get like that sometimes? Or you think that's, you know, what am I anyway? I'm just kind of some kind of con man, you know, some salesman, kind of bamboozling people. If I can't convince them, I'll just confuse them, you know. And, you know, it can kind of play on you, you know. So to reassure his disciples, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he says, this is in that book again, Bhaktisiddhanta Vaibhava, your collection by bhiksha and that of those making a business of dharma externally appear exactly the same. Because there was others going around as well collecting on the doors, but it was of dubious intention that they wanted the money for. They can temporarily create a false picture of selflessness and concern for others and thereby imitate your actions to avoid the public's criticism, and the public will be cheated by all such talk. But your seeing that is no reason to lose enthusiasm. The dressing of a chaste wife to please her husband and the charming display of a prostitute appear similar. The prostitute might seem even more expert and eager to please a man than does his chaste wife. But those who can discern inner motives will realize the great difference. One is exalted like the sky, whereas the other is subterranean low. One will be cheated if he attempts to evaluate the genuine Vaishnavas or servants of the Lord only according to their external actions. So I thought that was a nice, you know, if your mind does start playing up, you can kind of pull it back in with that one, you know, from Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Okay, so is there any, there was one other one, but it's a bit of a long one from Bhaktisiddhanta, so I can maybe share it later after class if anyone wants to hear it. One of these really, I can't find it anyway now. Anyway, okay, so I'll finish there. Any questions or comments? Is that okay? Is that too early? That's good time? Okay, any questions or comments on the...